Access number 29549, Mr. John McGough, Grill 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. McGough?
I was born in Dundalk, County Louth, the Irish Republic, in June 1923.
What date in June?
The 11th of June 1923.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background, all about your family, what they did for a living and what sort of circumstances they lived in?
Well, my father was a lorry driver, and originally, as I said, I was born in Dundalk. We lived in Dundalk, then we moved to Dublin about 1937. Yeah. My father bought a lorry and started selling coal.
Could we stick to Dundalk a bit for a... So what was life like in Dundalk for you and the family when you were a kid? Because you were there until you were, what, 16?
15 or 16. Yeah. It was a very, very happy life as far as we children were concerned, because we didn't realise what the adults had to put up with. Lack of work, lack of opportunity. And people just didn't have money to do as they would like. And of course we didn't appreciate the situation at the time. It was only since I became adult and my father spoke to me how difficult it was for a man to bring up a family. And large families were common in Southern Ireland.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
Three brothers and three sisters.
And was your father not, he wasn't in steady employment while he was in Dundalk?
No, casual employment, whatever he could get. But then when we moved to Dublin, he invested in a lorry.
Well, that's only when you were 14, 15?
Yes, that's right, yes.
Now, so what do you remember about your time in Dundalk, growing up there?
Well, I remember my time, how happy a childhood we had, although we had no money. Out in the fresh air, no predatory strangers around at that time, and enjoying ourselves, making fun.
And what about your education? Tell us about your education. You'd have all your education now, I presume.
Well, I had, when we moved to Dublin, I went to the Christian Brothers School in
Dundalk.
In Dundalk. I was educated at the local school in Dundalk, also the Christian Brothers, which was equivalent to the secondary school. I spent some time there.
So, now, how did you do at school? I mean, what were your favourite subjects? What were you good at?
Well, even though I say it myself, I was quite imaginative, and anything which required imagination I was quite good at. In fact, we had an essay one day of our own choice. The teacher let us choose what we would like to write about. I wrote about a German who was in the French Foreign Legion before the First World War, and when the First World War started, the battle of loyalties he had, whether he should not fight for France or whether he should honour his obligation and fight for France. That's the type of thing I was interested in. And the teacher said, "Where did you get this from?" I said, "It's what I thought myself."
So you had a fair imagination.
Yeah, well, I've always had imagination. I think mostly Irish people have.
So you liked history, that sort of subject. How did you do at school?
Quite well. I was never a prize pupil, but I was always towards the top of the class.
Now, you moved to Dublin in 1937.
I can't remember, it was late 37 or early 1938.
And what was life there? Tell us about life there. How did it differ from... It's a very different atmosphere in
a
small village.
Well, we moved from a house. We lived in a house in Dundalk. We moved to a flat in the north side of Dublin, not far from the River Liffey. And that was confining after being used to a house living in a flat. And as I said, my father bought a lorry, flat bedded lorry, and bought sacks of coal and then took them and resold them out in the countryside. Not so much in the town, he went around supplying priests' houses or nunneries, or where there were congregations of people who lived together, he supplied them wholesale with coal. But it didn't work out for him. I don't know the details, but it just didn't work out.
So his business failed?
Business failed, yes. That's it, yes.
Now, what about your plans? Because we've got a copy of your memoirs, which we're going to put in a copy of in our Department of Documents, or possibly in your file, one or the other, people can look. You had a great interest in military things. Tell us about, because what were your ambitions? Because they were all to be stymied, but what were your ambitions?
Well, I was always interested in things military, And I could imagine myself as a British soldier in the plains of India, you know, in my imagination. And when we were in Dublin at the Christian Brothers schools, in those days, it's the same as it is today. There were civil service examinations for entrance to a cadetship in the Irish Army. And I was hoping to take that examination and pass it and possibly pass the interview and be accepted as a cadet in the Irish Army.
That was your plan?
That was my plan. That was my plan, yes.
Now, it all went wrong, though. Yeah, well, what happened when your father's business failed?
Well, I don't know the reason for its failure. Obviously, he didn't sell enough coal, but then we, my father decided to go to Great Britain. So my father and I, we went first, we went to Birmingham. And we were so short of money that for the first 2 or 3 weeks we slept in the Salvation Army hostel in Steelhouse Lane in Birmingham.
Now, you went, do you know which month, August? Was it just before the war or...?
Oh, this was in 1938.
1938?
38, yes. I can't remember the actual month.
Now, what was life like as an Irish migrant? I mean, how were you treated in Birmingham? Because things were much harsher then, weren't they?
Well, at the time, I believe the IRA were conducting a military campaign in Coventry. And just after, or just before our arrival, some civilians were killed, and of course there was a very, very, very strong anti-Irish feeling amongst the population as a whole. Once you opened your mouth, they didn't want to know you because they associated us with the IRA, Dad and I, but we had nothing to do with them, of course.
Now, so, did that make it difficult to gain employment or accommodation?
My father was lucky enough, after a couple of weeks in the Salvation Army hostel, we managed to get a little flat. And then he managed to get a job driving a lorry for a local contractor in Smethwick, which is one of the, on the outskirts of Birmingham. So he got a job. Well, I couldn't get a job. I went around looking for various jobs, but as soon as I spoke, they realised I was Irish. And some were polite, some were not impolite, just didn't want to know, you see.
So you were in England for a whole year before the war broke out?
Yes.
Your memoirs say you moved to England in 39. You're not sure, or is that just wrong in the memoir?
Well, it's probably late 38 or early 39. Not quite actually sure.
No problem. So what happened is, so you were unemployed. Did the rest of the family come over, or was it just you and your dad still?
No, my father and I got settled in the flat. Then my mother came over with the rest of the family. And an interesting thing happened to us. We'd only been in the flat about 3 or 4 weeks when there was a knock on the door one night, and the special branch from the police came along, questioned my father when he came over, what he was doing. As I say, it was the time when the IRA were bombing Coventry. I'm always surprised. I always wonder how they knew we were there, and how quickly they got on to us. But of course, of just a routine questioning. We had no connection at all with what was happening military.
Did your father say what were you there during the interview? Did you see what happened, or was he taken away for it?
Oh no, he wasn't. Just questioned in the flat, and that was it. We never saw them again.
So what happened next then? What were you doing when war broke out in September 1939?
Well, when September 1939, I heard on the radio or read in the paper that they were forming the Home Guard.
Now that would be a bit later.
Oh yeah.
That'd be after the evacuation of Dunkirk, which is in 1940. Do you remember the day war broke out? Did you hear the news or were you?
No, funny enough, I was in Digbeth in Birmingham, which was then the central area of Birmingham when the war broke out. I happened to be there, and there were stop presses coming out in the papers, and the paper men were shouting, war declared, war declared. So I was actually there on my own when the war broke out in September 1939 in Digbeth.
Now, tell me about your training with the local defence volunteers then. You're not sure when you joined, but your impression was you joined earlier than...
Very, very early, as soon as they were formed.
I thought that was May. I thought it was 1940, but I'm not sure, so...
As I say, I'm not quite sure that... But as soon as the announcement was made, I went to the local police station and put my name down. At that time, I'd managed to get a job in a plastics manufacturer in Smedley called Everett and Company.
Well, tell me about that first, and we'll go on the Home Guard. What were you doing for the plastics company?
Plastics.
As a labourer?
Just a labourer, and on a tube-making machine, which they also made copper tubing, and I was helping on a machine which made copper tubing.
So, and what was work like there? How did you enjoy the work?
Oh, it was very unimaginative, very repetitive, very, very repetitive. Didn't give you much chance if you're imaginative, and I didn't like it all that much. But they did offer me promotion straight enough in my early age, because the man who operated the machine went ill, and the foreman said to me, Johnny said, do you want to take over his job? I said, no, I didn't. I was his assistant. So at least they must have realised I had got the potential to do the job.
Now, tell me how you joined the Home Guard then, the local defence volunteers.
Well, as I said, I was working in this plastic and brass founders and a plastic factory, and they formed the Home Guard, so I joined there. Everett, EVRED, Everett and Company Limited, Smedic.
And how did you actually join up? You seem to have gone to Piddock Road Police Station.
I went to Piddock Road Police Station and put my name down. And the next thing I remember was actually being a member of the Home Guard.
And that was it based at Piddock Road at the police station, or was it based at the factory?
It was based at the factory. We were a factory unit. And we wore the badge of the South Staffordshire Regiment.
What do you remember of the early days? You joined very early on. Did you get a uniform?
Yes, not a woolen uniform, but a denim uniform with the LDV, Local Defence Volunteers, on it, and an armband. It was denim and a side cap, as I said, with a cap badge of the South Staffordshire Regiment.
And when did you get more uniform? What came next?
Well, I never got anything further than...
You never got anything more than that?
No, simply because I joined the army.
Now, what were the other lads like? I mean, do you remember sort of who were the, for instance, who were the officers and instructors?
Mostly elderly men who'd served in the First World War or had been regulars in the army, and they were our instructors, mostly sergeants and so on.
And what did you think of them? How good were they?
Oh, they were very, very keen and very, very efficient. They taught us all about the Lee Enfield 303 rifle and how to use it.
Do you remember their training? Because, I mean, how much detail did they go into? What do you remember of your rifle training?
Very, very little. Very, very little. I remember mostly being in guard at night time. Sometimes you did night guard. Well, they were very, very keen on rifle drill. Smart rifle drill.
So just not training so much as drill?
Drill.
Not learning to shoot, but just drill.
I don't think I ever shot the 303 from the 303 rifle. We had miniature little guns for shooting at targets, which was a substitute for firing the real thing, I presume.
And what other training did you do?
We also had a fire pump based in the works, and at the back of the works was the canal, and we used to operate the fire pump, putting the suction hose in the canal, letting to pump water, so if the place ever caught fire or was bombed, we could perhaps help to extinguish the fire. So the two things were the basic military training and operating this fire pump.
And was that as part of a fire watching program? So the only training you got was drill, no weapons training at all?
No.
And operating the fire pump. Now, what about your duties then? So what duties would you carry out?
Guard duties, mainly at night time.
Tell me about the guard duties.
Well, we had a steel cook, like a cupola, a steel cupola with a sliding door. And when we were outside, you could stand in there. It was raining or wet or cold. And we used to challenge and check all the workers coming in in the early morning when they were due, the people were due to come to work. We checked and made sure they were got a right to come into the factory. So that's all I remember about that.
And what about patrolling the factory ground, the sort of perimeter and everything?
Well, I can only remember being on static sentry duty in these metal cupola sort of affairs and challenging the workers. But most of them I knew by looking at them, I knew the names and who they were, so I didn't have to check their IDs.
So no patrolling duties. What about fire watching? I mean, that's presumably why you were learning the pump.
Yeah.
Did you have fire watching role?
Not that I can remember. Not that I can remember.
Guard duties. Anything else with the Home Guard then?
No, I think that's all I can remember about the Home Guard, because I wasn't in it too long, because I wasn't...
What happened next then?
Well, I joined the British Army.
That's in December 1940. Had the bombing started by then? Do you remember any bombing of Birmingham?
I remember smelling the Comrie bombing. We could see that from where we lived in Birmingham. And also Smedic, the town that I lived in, that was bombed.
What do you remember about that?
I remember there was a great excitement amongst we young people because there was a parachute mine landed on Smedic Town Hall, and we went up and we could see it swinging at the end of its parachute. It didn't explode, fortunately, until the military chased us away.
Was there much bombing, or was that a lone bomb? Do you see what I mean?
Oh, there was reasonably bombing. My late wife and her family, the back of their house was blown out, and they were rehoused, and she and her mum and dad and the rest of the family were in the Anderson shelter in the garden, so they were lucky. So she lost her home in the bombing.
Did you have an Anderson shelter?
No, we had a three-bedroom house with a very, very large cellar, and the local authority came along and reinforced the cellar with iron girders and strengthened the thing generally, and we were the shelter for perhaps four or five occupants of houses in the neighbourhood. They came to our shelter because it had been specially prepared by the local authority.
In the shelter like that?
Well, it was just a normal cellar with the steps down and reinforcing girders, horizontal and vertical.
What was it like, you know, when you all got down there?
Oh, it was quite a fun time, really, in spite of the serious occurrences round about. People talked, sang, drank plenty of tea, and it sort of brought people together.
Did you get seats down there, or benches or something? Or
No, we just had chairs that were brought down from the living room. And if people didn't have a chair, well, they brought their own.
Now, anything else you remember? You weren't attached to the ARP at all?
No,
you were just Home Guard?
Nothing to do with the ARP, no.
Anything else you remember before you'd sign up? You sign up December 40, don't you?
Yeah, December 1940.
Okay, now what made you volunteer to join up then? Because you were still underage, weren't you? 17.
Yeah, I was 17, about 17 and a half, and 17 and a half in 1940, December 40. And
how did you get to join up then?
Well, like I told you previously, I was always interested in the military life, and decided to go and join the British Army. So I went to the Blue Gates Hotel in Smedic, where there was a recruiting office, and joined the army there.
Now, how did you actually do it? Because, you know, you have to tell it. You're going to have to tell them a fib for a start. How did you do it?
Well, I went upstairs to the recruiting office. There was a hoary old recruiting sergeant, wise in the ways of the world. And I said, I want to join the army. He says, how old are you, son? I said, I'm 18 and a half. He said, are you sure? I said, yes. Of course, I wasn't. I said, but before I do anything, I want to join an Irish regiment, like the Royal Irish Fusiliers, Ulster Rifles, something like that. He pretended to look at the list. I always realised I was conned. He pretended to look at the list and said, I'm sorry, lad, he said, we've just filled all these regiments. said, go. But we've got a nice regiment. You'll like it. It's by the seaside at Southend on Sea, the Essex Regiment. I'd never even heard of Essex. So I ended up as a private in the Essex Regiment.
Was there a medical or anything like that?
Oh, yes. We had quite a strict medical, and a character interview to see if you had ever been in trouble with the police or any crimes that you had committed. That's about all.
So that meant, so where did you go to? So you don't go to January, do you? I think you go in January 1941.
Yeah, early in January. I went actually not to Southend and say to Upminster in Essex.
And which battalion was it?
70th Young Soldiers Battalion. We're all young soldiers.
And obviously, the Essex Regiment. Now, what do you remember of the trip down there? Because even just for you, it must have been quite a bit of a journey, because you didn't even know where these places are.
Yes.
You're Irish. You know.
It was very, very difficult. But I got I got plenty of good common sense. And it was quite an adventure catching a train from Birmingham to London, then getting the tube out to Upminster. But I managed all right, and I didn't experience any great problems. Just a matter of common sense.
And what was your reception like? You know, when you get, because you're a civilian, you've been in the Home Guard, but you are a civilian when you arrive. Well, yeah. How did they treat you when you first arrived?
Well, when we arrived, we were billeted in the drill hall, the Territorial Army drill hall in Upminster, and we slept on the floor the first night.
Now, what was that billet like?
It was a large open space, and we just bedded down where we could for the night.
Did you have any beds or anything?
No palliasses. And a couple of blankets, that was it.
And were they shouting, or what, how did the NCOs treat you? How did everyone behave?
Well, the first night they told us where to go and sleep and what was expected, what time we were to be up in the morning. But they were quite good to us. They didn't shout at that stage of the thing. Didn't shout at us very much at all. And in a short while, we moved into better accommodation, into houses which had been requisitioned by the army. We lived in the houses.
That would be after a little. That wasn't the next night, though.
No, it was after some time.
We'll come back to that in a bit. Now, what about kitting out? So what do you remember about being kitted out? Because you had no kit, obviously, uniform and kit. What did they give you? What do you remember about that?
Well, they gave us the khaki uniform, boots, underclothes, socks, great coat, side cap, regimental badge. That was it.
Did it fit?
Yes, fortunately enough, it was. I've very often heard jokes about people having baggy uniforms, but I was always fortunate. Whenever I got a uniform, it fitted, so I must have been a standard sort of figure for the uniform.
And what about equipment? Did they give you the webbing and everything?
Yes, the first webbing we had was webbing from the First World War, that the soldiers were in the First World War. And the instructors told us how to reassemble it and wear it. So, in a sense, we were wearing equipment that had been worn by soldiers in the First World War. And then, after a short time, when supplies became better, we had Bren gun equipment.
I'll come to that.
Yeah.
Now, what about, how did you get on with the lads? Because, you know, you joined, you're in a way an outsider. Yeah, I mean, you're not, but I mean, you're from Ireland. And how did you get on with the other lads first?
Well, most of the... My fellow soldiers from London area, quite a few of them were Cockneys, and I got on with them quite well initially. But from that day onwards, I was never called John, I was always called Paddy for the rest of my military service.
Now, it says in your notes there was a bit of a tendency to bullying. Can you just explain what you mean by that and what happened?
Well, I think a lot of these Londoners are more worldly wise than perhaps myself, who got a rural background from Ireland. And they tended to play tricks on you and give you false information, just nothing physical in it at all.
So what happened?
Well, I thought to myself, well, I might as well try and get on in the regiment. And the first thing, one of the things I clearly remember how important it was that we were taught regimental history.
Hang on, you're moving away from what I have to, because in your notes you've got a big thing about a fight in a queue.
Oh, yes.
And that all sounds very physical to me. So.
Oh, I've forgotten that, you reminded me.
Is that right? Can you just tell us about that first?
Well, we were queued up for breakfast early one morning, and I was towards the end of the queue, and so some of these cockneys came along and said, get out, go to the back of the queue, we want your place. But I stuck my ground and said no, and I made a stand. But they were menacing, but once they saw that I was not going to move, they went on to somebody else.
So they didn't actually hit you?
Oh no, not at all, never been assaulted, no.
Now, can we look at a sort of typical day's training? Because that way we can look at lots of things that come off it, you know. Now, how would your day start when you were with the 70th Young Soldiers? What time would it start? How would it start?
Now, let me think now. Start at 6:30 in the morning. Wash, shave, on parade, and inspected about 7 o'clock.
Now, how big an inspection was that? Or was that just of you or your room as well?
That was the inspection of the group of soldiers who were there, not a living accommodation.
And what about breakfast?
Breakfast was a typical English breakfast. And I also remember an incident involving an officer, the orderly officer, at breakfast one morning. And the orderly officer came in with the orderly sergeant. And suddenly he rapped his cane on one of the tables and said, silence, men, I've got something to say to you. The officer then stood on the form and he said, look at this uncouth individual, pointed at some unfortunate soldier. He said, he's got a knife and fork and yet he's eating his bacon in a sandwich. So there's obviously something wrong with this officer. We never saw him again. He was taken away. A bit embarrassing for the poor old man who was using his sandwich. And he should have been using a knife and fork, according to the officer. But he disappeared, he was taken away.
The officer wasn't just inadequate?
Well, there was something wrong with him mentally, I would think, you know, yes.
Now, what did you think of the food?
Oh, the food was good, but not enough of it. Alas, to the best of my knowledge, the last meal was about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and you got nothing until breakfast the next morning.
So what would you get for breakfast?
English breakfast. Porridge, eggs, bacon, toast, tea.
And then lunch?
Well, I just can't remember lunch, but it was more or less...
Would it be a sort of full stew and everything? Or?
Oh yes, like something you get at home. There was nothing unusual about it. Meat dish of some sort, yes.
And